The political cost of mass immigration and the global financial crisis. The decision to open Britain's labour market to the citizens of the 10 countries due to join the EU in 2004 was made by Tony Blair's government as early as 2002, when they expected the rest of the EU to do the same. They predicted that a maximum of 12,000 people from the A8 countries would arrive in Britain in 2004. This decision was widely supported in the British Parliament at the time. The British economy was booming and the demand for labour was strong. However, in much of the rest of the EU, the economic situation was different. The French and German economies were stagnant and unemployment was rising. The other EU countries delayed the decision on whether to open their labour markets to people from the new members until 2004, when all but Ireland and Sweden decided to limit immigration. It is difficult to say exactly what impact this had on the number of people deciding to come to the UK. But instead of 12,000 A8 citizens arriving in 2004, the total turned out to be over 112,000. Higher numbers were seen every year in the ensuing years. Despite the overall economic benefit to the UK of immigration, the rapid increase in the number of EU immigrants, particularly those from A8 countries, made immigration an increasingly controversial issue in British politics. Anti-immigration sentiment was fanned and exploited by Britain's right-wing press, particularly in the popular daily tabloid newspaper, the Daily Mail. Despite the fact that more than 50% of annual immigration to the UK was from countries outside the EU, and therefore under the direct control of the UK government, it was the EU policy of freedom of movement of people that became the target of those opposed to immigration. By the end of the noughties, immigration was, however unfairly, widely blamed for increasing pressure on public services, increasing pressure on housing, schools, and hospitals, and undercutting wages for local workers. Although there may have been specific localities where these criticisms had some truth, most studies conclude that the overall impact of immigration had none of these effects. Nevertheless, the public perception in much of England, especially outside large cosmopolitan cities, was that the costs of immigration outweighed the benefits. There has always been a minority of UK citizens who have opposed open immigration policies, but perhaps the turning point for public support for the freedom of movement of people within the EU and for membership of the EU in general was the global financial crisis of 2007-08. The collapse of the US real estate market quickly spread to global financial markets in general. Financial institutions across the world had invested heavily in assets based on US property and now faced massive losses. This culminated in 2008 with the collapse of the famous US investment bank Lehman Brothers, the so-called Lehman Shock. As the losses mounted, banks around the world faced bankruptcy, but UK banks were particularly badly affected. Faced with the possibility of the collapse of its entire financial system, the UK government responded by pumping public money into the banking sector in order to rescue the banks. The government succeeded in preventing a total collapse of the banking system, but two major retail banks failed. the Royal Bank of Scotland, RBS, was taken into public ownership. That is, the government took control of the bank. And Northern Rock, a bank based in the northeast of England, closed altogether, leaving the government to cover the losses of its customers, whose accounts simply disappeared. The cost of saving the banking sector was enormous, and the UK government had to borrow huge sums in order to pay for it. Although economists widely believed the government's intervention had been essential in preventing the financial crisis from becoming a more general economic collapse, the public perceived the situation rather differently. What they saw was a small group of highly paid international bankers who had gambled recklessly with other people's money, evading responsibility for their failure and being rescued at public expense. Many people blamed globalization and the global financial system for the crisis, and believed that governments which supported this global system were doing so at the expense of ordinary people. Opponents of globalization had long complained that international finance and big businesses controlled too much of ordinary citizens' lives. They argued that the benefits of the global economic system went to a small international elite, while ordinary people lived increasingly precarious lives. The financial crisis seemed to confirm this view. The EU was seen by many as another institution designed to support the interests of global finance and big business, rather than those of its own citizens. Furthermore, anti-globalists argued that unscrupulous businesses could use the EU's freedom of movement of people to recruit cheap labour from overseas and undermine workers' rights and cut wages. So, one of the results of the financial crisis in the UK was to integrate the politics of anti-globalisation with anti-immigration and anti-EU politics. Opposition to the EU was hardening on both the populist nationalist right and the populist anti-globalisation left. A coalition of people opposing the EU for various reasons was beginning to form. Traditional right-wing nationalists opposed to sharing British sovereignty with EU institutions, and traditional left-wing anti-capitalists were uniting in purpose with populist anti-immigration forces and populist anti-globalisation forces. This coalition was searching for a political voice, as both major parties in British politics, the Conservatives and Labour, were largely supportive of both EU membership and the global economic system.